The Hilchos Rosh Hashanah in the Torah and Shulchan Aruch run through Tafresh Aleph. Tafresh Beis. The Shulchan Aruch turns attention to Aseres Yemetshuva. Shulchan Aruch says that this day, according to the Rambam, that we're marble the Tfilos Pesachanunim. Rambam did not have the practice of saying Slichas throughout Elul, nor even part of Elul, but he does talk about Hilchos Tshuva, about saying Slichas in Aseres Yemetshuva. And even our Ashkenazi practice, we've been saying Slichas since before Rosh Hashanah, but it's more intense. There are additional piyutim fit into different parts of the beginning and the end of Slichas. And even more centrally, there are more Slichas, which allow for more repetitions of Hashem, Hashem, Kerach, Mechanon. And there are particular types of Slichas that are introduced, such as the Akedah. Now, in the Aseres Yemetshuva, right before the Pizmon, there's always a tshuva that's dedicated to the Akedah. If you keep your eyes open, those piyutim in particular were written, I think Bechlal it may be the case that the piyutim Aseres Yemetshuva, even more than the piyutim of pre-Rosh Hashanah, there's a greater percentage, I think, they're written by famous names, Rishonim whose names we know and recognize. Rabbi Gershom and the Ritzva, and so on and so forth. This morning there were Bava Kama references in one of the sefers, Avraham and Zikin. The piyutim of the slichos of the Akedos in particular, there's a lot of richness if you pay attention. A lot of language used. Last week there was a piyut that may have been on some Gedalia that spoke about Rishayim Bailov, sort of using like Kutchim type thinking. To think about the Akedah. Today, you got to spend some time thinking about this. Today's Akedah referred at one point poetically to Yitzchak as a tena bikurim, as a basket of bikurim, which is an interesting Akedah you usually think of as a korban. Well, that's what it was meant to be. Bikurim is something that's offered, the farmer brings to the Zamikdash, but it's not a korban. Maybe that's part of what that... that metaphor is seizing on, that there's value to presenting even if there isn't actually a shechita, perhaps. A lot going on in the slichas, particularly in the slichas of Aseres Yemetshuva, and we begin to say Avinu Malkeinu, and then the Ramah goes on to say, leaving aside all the technical pieces of the Seder HaTfilah, the Ramah says in the next siman, Tafresh Gimel, a din that you should be involved in avodas avosah. Yesh l'chal adam l'chapes u'l'fashpesh b'ma'asav. A person ought to be engaged in self-reflection, looking in the mirror, metaphorically speaking, and making a chashma nafesh. To think about several things that I've done that I'm very proud of, and to think about several things I've done that need a tune-up. The Lashuv Bahem, the Aseres Yemetshuva. And then, the Mishnah Berurah goes on to quote, that Mishnah Berurah goes on to quote that even a person doesn't learn Sefer Musar all year long, but certainly Aseres Yemetshuva, one should be involved. He gives you several suggestions, the different Sefer Musar to learn. Then the Ramah, fascinating. The Ramah gives a sample Dvar Musar. He says, a Dvar Musar. Interesting. What is the sample Dvar Musar that he gives? He quotes Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says the following. Rabbeinu Yonah says, so you know and I know, that if a Jew does, there's a list of more than 30 Averis, which are Averis Chamurus. If a Jew violates Shabbos, B'mezid, a Jew violates Avodah Zarah, B'mezid, and so on and so forth, even without Eden Vasra, what's Yechayiv? Karis. And then you know that you have an Averis for which one is Chayiv Karis B'mezid. What happens if you do that Averis B'shogeg? The Jew didn't realize it was Shabbos? Chatzis. Karban Chatzis. So let's say a Jew was eating chalev, rachman l'tzlan, the fat from the hindquarters of the animal, more or less those fats which were this animal to be a carbon, that would be a murim burnt on the mizbeach. This animal is not a carbon, just an animal, just Bessie the cow, we shechter her to eat. But if a Jew eats the chela from the hindquarters of the animal, that is one of the most severe types of treif, one of the most severe types of machalos asuris. It's not only a lot, karis. A Jew eats chela b'mezit karis. A Jew eats chela b'shoge. What does he do? What did he say before? Carbon? Chatz. Let's say, though, he's not sure. To eat chalev b'shogeg means he didn't realize this was chalev. He thought he was eating something kosher. And then it turns out afterwards, no, you ate the chalev. He thought he was eating the kosher meat. He's actually eating the treif meat. Carbon chatas, rachman tzlan. That's how he will achieve kapar. Let's say, instead of saying, oh, you thought that blue package in the fridge was Schumann was kosher, no, it's actually chalev, in which case he would bring carbon chatas. Instead, they tell him, oh, you took one of the blue packages? Uh-oh. There were two blue packages in the fridge. One was kosher and one was chalev. But they weren't marked. The red package is all kosher. You were supposed to have a red package. You had a blue package, gevalt. One of the blue packages was treif, one of the blue packages was kosher. What's it then? Asham tali. It's not clear whether or not you did an avera b'shogeg. It definitely wasn't amazing. You did something which may or may not have been avera b'shogeg, asham talib. So Rabbeinu Yonah in Brachas is quoted by the Ramah right here in Hilchos Aseres Metshuva, Tafresh Gimel, is asking the following question. The problem with that is, which carbon do you think should cost more? The carbon chatas that you bring when you know for sure you violate an iniser, or the asham talay, which not clear if you did anything wrong now. Which should be worth more? But it is asham talay. The chah how? Because the chatas, what's the minimum cost of the chatas? There is no minimum cost of chatas. If you find that if you buy a goat on eBay for 1 cent, of course there's 1 cent. It's going to be number one. 1 cent is going to go up 5 minutes before it's going to get bid up to $500. And number two, the shipping and handling they're going to get you there, $150 shipping and handling. Okay, but imagine you actually bought a goat on the cheap. You bought a goat for $5. Well, a goat for $2. Well, for one pruta. Whatever. A guy gave you a goat as a present. Whatever it is. You got a goat if it's not a balmum, it fits all the specifications. So your yotze, your carbon chatas. The story of Kain and Hevel might remind us that buying a carbon on the cheap is definitely not the way to optimize your carbon experience, nor the gain one intends to have and the growth one seeks to have from a carbon. But, technically speaking, one has the Kain bringing a carbon chatas no matter what the cost is. But with a carbon asham, there is a minimum cost. Shtei kesef. It costs less than shtei kesef, that animal is not roy for a carbon asham, including asham tali. So Ben Yonah says in Brachas, I understand. So it's punkapaya. So olam hafach, I understand. For a safek avera, you have to spend more than for a vad avera. It shouldn't be the other way around. Mamash avad avera, you're mechal Shabbos, you ate chalev. Over to Avodah Zarah. Terrible. A fellow is safek. Okay, so maybe he didn't do anything wrong. So what's talk of the pshah? What's talk of the pshah? Yeah. Oh, exactly. So Ben Yonah says, because the halachically speaking, that would be correct, but that's only half the picture. Exactly. As I've said, you also have to think that the Torah is sensitive to the psychological piece of it also. Tshuva requires a person being willing to recognize, that he made mistakes. Mm-hmm. And that is very hard, because human beings have a fantastic capacity to play defense. Whether or not you're good on the court or on the field, we all play defense in our premise. We have a great capacity to defend our egos from any hint of critique or criticism or the notion that we may have failed. Sometimes people go the other extreme and they wallow in self-criticism in unhealthy ways. But very often, even if you're doing that, you're also at the same time trying to play defense against really addressing the fact, I made a mistake, and I have to I have to recognize. And as Mesillas Yesharim points out, we'll see Mirtzem next month in Paragimel, he points out the goal of Cheshma Nefesh, the goal of looking in the mirror, is not to say what a terrible person I am. The goal of looking in the mirror is to see what are the things that I've, of which I've succeeded that I can be proud of, and those are things I should double down on and do more of, and what are the things that need, the things I'm not so proud of, and he says, not to beat myself up over it. What are the things that are wrong, that I do regret, I'll be honest with myself, and then I'll move towards strategizing for the future. Figure out a plan. How can tomorrow be different than yesterday? But the only way you can strategize methodically for a different tomorrow is first to recognize what happened yesterday. And that is very hard to do. And it's even harder when it's a suffix, because that's just there's one example of how our minds will play tricks and say, well, maybe it wasn't so bad. Maybe I didn't really do an Aveira. Okay, maybe not, and maybe yes. And honestly, and maybe you know Aveira, and there's also a real possibility. It's a 50-50 chance that you ate Chelev B'Shogeg. So that's something to, is certainly an irresponsibility and the possibility of a real sinful outcome that I need to address. But it's that much harder to come to grips with the fact that I did an Aveira, or I may have done Aveira, when there's always the ability to be more hatcher. Well, maybe it wasn't wrong, maybe it was okay. And that allows us to sort of put it aside instead of addressing things. So when it's harder to address, I need to invest more, even literally, in terms of funds. The outcome, the desired outcome of spending significantly on a carbon is you spend money on the things that matter. So the fact that I had to plunk down real cash to buy this animal, to buy this carbon ashram, reinforces Achreya Pulusim Shachan Lavavos that this is something that I'm really, figuratively speaking, investing in. This is something I'm really going to work on. So the Torah realizes, Ribbono Shel Olam realizes that this is an area that's going to require more focus. And it's intriguing that this is like the Ramah's exemplary, this is like the one example, the one paradigm of a Dvar Musa. Apparently this is something worth, this idea itself, Ramah felt is well worth our time digesting and thinking about, turning this idea over our minds. What are the areas where we allow critique in, and what are the areas where we tend to play defense and not allow critique in? And sometimes it has to do with restructuring, recasting our own minds, the way we process critique. Do I see critique as, oh, he's saying that I'm a bad person? Oh, he's saying I'm not really worth it? Oh, he's saying that I'm a good-for-nothing, I don't really make the cut? Or he's saying that I'm a good person who needs to fix X. Great people, one of the characteristics of truly effective people tends to be, it's not the only characteristic, one of the characteristics of truly effective people tends to be the capacity to absorb and even to proactively seek out feedback and constructive criticism that allows me to get better. And that tends to be a necessary step towards methodically, effectively growing, is seeking out. No one is perfect. Everyone has loads. Everyone's born with loads of flaws. And the way to address them is to first know them. And it's hard to know them on your own. If you get comfortable, if you're oev tochechos, as Shlomo Melch writes in Mishlei, as the Tanaim quote, so if I switch the way I think about criticism and I embrace it, criticism from people who care about me, not from people just trying to deflate me, but criticism from people who care about me, a critique is a way of constructive feedback. So then I open myself up to so much more growth in every way, in every aspect of life, and particularly in terms of the things that really matter, in terms of ruchni pursuits. But again, that's an example of what we want to be doing more broadly over the course of Zayis Mitzvah, as I mentioned before, that the Mishnah Berurah, I think, is in Os Beis. I think it goes to Rush as suggesting that you learn Rabbein Yonah. And the Rush lived a generation, one generation after Rabbeinu Yonah. The Rush was a contemporary of the Rashbah, who was a Talmud of the Ramban and Rabbeinu Yonah. And then the Mishnah Berurah goes on to quote, both Arizal and the Gra talk about the value of learning Musar throughout the year. And they are both Kabbalists, Arizal and the Gra. It should be noted that a non-Kabbalist named the Rambam also assumes, in the first page of Hilchos Deis, he's very clear that a Jew needs to be engaged in ongoing avodas hamusar on one's midos, throughout on an ongoing basis, not just a seres mitzvah, not just rarely. Avodas hamidos requires ongoing work, and it is really doable if I'm going to invest ongoing work. And it's important to remember that the other half of doing tshuva on averus appears in a couple of simanim later in Tav Resh Vav, which appears in the last parak of Yuma in the halachas halacha l'mais b'zman hazev Yom Kippur, and it's a full simon here in Shulchan Aruch, officially in the Erev Yom Kippur section, which begins with Siman Tav Resh Dalet, but it's probably kedai to start now. Tav Resh Vav is a din that we know, we've heard since we're little kids, but you should actually, now with more adult minds, actually think about what this really means, which is, if you did a chet b'nam l'makom, so the route to kapara starts with tshuva b'nam l'makom. If one did a chet b'nam l'chavero, the route needs to go through a conversation with your chaver. That's like a real, that's real Judaism. That's a real din. So we heard this as little kids and it was sort of like cute and abstract. But that's for real. Like we've all been witness at the very least to averes b'nam l'chavero. Perhaps we've been recipients of averes b'nam l'chavero. And perhaps we've been practitioners of averes b'nam l'chavero. And it's worth being misbonding. This is real Judaism. And at Deres Eretz makes tshuva, part of the vote is, who have I caused hurt to? I did something that hurt someone. I didn't do something and that hurt someone, commission or omission. I said something, whether I taka said it with the malicious intent, or if I admit to myself, I sort of was going, you know, going for the shtach, or I may have meant it innocently. I really did mean it innocently, even b'toch tochi. It was meant innocently, and I wasn't thinking, and I said something, I didn't realize who else was in the group, or I said something to someone, I wasn't thinking how he was going to take it, and after I'm like, what did I do? Or I didn't think it would hurt him, and then it became clear to me afterwards that he was taken aback, that he was hurt. So that is a chesh b'nam l'chavero. But I did it b'shogeg, I did it b'mezid, and the din is I need to have a conversation. I have to reach out and I have to amend. That's like real yadus. This is like Yiddishkeit. This is Shulchan Aruch. It's a Mishnah in Yuma. It's a din in Shulchan Aruch. And you don't have to, and it doesn't mean, oh, you moichel me. Like the cute, that's cute. When you're a little kid and you run around, you know, during recess, the last day of yeshiva before Yom Kippur, asking everyone if they moichel you. That's cute. But that's not authentic. But there is something you can do which is authentic, which is to actually go over to people you think you hurt and say, I'm really sorry. I want to reach out. This is not a text. This is in person or a phone call. Or maybe sometimes, if you think this situation is going to be delicate, sometimes a letter, yes, an actual letter written with like one of these, take a pen or even go to Target or go to Walgreens and buy a card and take a pen and write a card to someone and tell them, maybe a family member or maybe a friend or maybe a guy in the bus or a roommate or whatever it is, write it on a piece of paper and explain, if you think it'd be too difficult to open the conversation initially face-to-face or directly on the phone, and talk about how you feel. And maybe explain. Sometimes it's easier when things are particularly delicate to put things on paper. In positive relationships, there's a unique power to putting things into writing also. But when you, in this situation, where you need to cure a situation that is not ideal, sometimes it's easier for people to read everything when it's asynchronous. To say it, you're not sure how it's going to come out, then you're not sure, the person may shut you down right away, you need to explain yourself, whatever it is. I'm worried that in the moment, it's not going to come out, I'm just going to regret again what I said this time. But sometimes it's better. Buy a card, take some regular paper, draft it on regular paper, when you have your nusach ready, you write in the card, and you drop it off. You drop it off, you mail it, you send it, someone drops it off for you, whatever it is, you stick it in his knapsack, slip it under his door, whatever it is, and this is like real yadus. This is not a minis chasidus. This is ikra din. This is Tav Siman Tav Resh Vav in Shulchan Aruch, and you don't have to wait for Erev Yom Kippur. All of Aseres Mitzvah is a gevaldik katan. And it begins again, though, as he said in Tavrish Gimel, with making a cheshbon nefesh, and asking myself, are there people? I may know. It could be I'm very aware that there are one or two people that I need to ask mechila from, or maybe I'm very aware that someone needs to ask mechila for me. Maybe if I thought about it more, maybe both need to ask mechila from each other. Maybe not. Different situations are different. Or maybe people that it doesn't strike me as, it's not in my mind, but if I think of it, if I stop and take 10 minutes with a pen and paper to think. You were joking before about going to the forest, but it doesn't have to be such a long distance as Bodhidus. Last night I read a record someone wrote of, he drove 12 hours to a remote forest in order to do cheshbon nefesh. That seems, if you have a lot of time in your hands, I guess it works for him. But you don't need to be so dramatic in order to do an effective cheshbon nefesh. But to carve out time, to carve out 10 minutes, that's just with you, with no phone, and no one else is expecting to hear from you, and just to be able to sit with a pen and paper and think, is a valuable thing to do all year long, and certainly during Aseres Metshuva, and it can open you up to all sorts of remarkable things. Okay, maybe we'll talk a drop about one aspect of Hilchos Yom Kippur now, then we'll head down to Seder. But one aspect of Hilchos Yom Kippur, actually the very first siman of Hilchos Erev Yom Kippur, is Tafresh Dalet. It's fascinating in its own right, and it also ricochets back to some of what we're talking about in terms of the halach and hashkafa of tshuva. And siman Tafresh Dalet is rooted, the Gemara points out, in a bizarre pasuk. The psukim about Yom Kippur, psukim go through in Parshas Amar, Parshas Amodim of Vayikra, all the various Yom Tovim, Pesach, Sfiras Omer, Shavuos, so forth, Rosh Hashanah, and then Yom Kippur. And when is Yom Kippur? The Torah tells you. On the 10th of the month. Tells us from the Dina, Ve'nisim, Nafshol Seichem, and so on and so forth. And then the closing pasuk of the paragraph, of that Parsha, when you might already be thinking we're wrapping up here, in public speaking, one of the usual principles is that you're not supposed to throw in surprises in your conclusion. Sometimes it's sort of like a next step. But you don't throw in a massive new chiddush, like a whole new, you develop sort of a series of three ideas. You're not going to throw in a totally new fourth idea in your conclusion, generally. But in the Parsha of Yom Kippur, in Emor, in the last pasuk, the Torah throws in, if you're not paying attention, you miss the fact that the date is actually Tishah L'Chodesh, Me'erev Ad Ba'erev, Me'erev Ad Erev Tishbu Shabbatchem. You're like, what? Tishah L'Chodesh. The Gemara says, I understand. The whole time you've been telling me that Yom Kippur is Asiri L'Chodesh. Now he's telling me the last pasuk, and by the way, it's the 9th of the month, Ma Pesher Advarim. So the Gemara is very bothered. The Chachmei Medrash are very bothered. So the Gemara quotes a couple of solutions. So one solution is, yeah, you start on the 9th of the month, the end of the 9th. This is a makor for Tosefes Yom Kippur. Even though Yom Kippur is on the 10th, you have to start the end of the 9th. You can't only begin fasting when the 10th comes in. The end of the 9th has to be included as well. Mikan Shemosif Mechol HaKodesh. And the Gemara goes on to say, prices, that it's not only true the beginning of Yom Kippur, it's also true the end of Yom Kippur. You have to Mosiv at the end. You have to go into Yud Aleph. And it's not just Yom Kippur. It's also every Shabbos, every Yom Tov. The Rambam does not quote the every Shabbos, every Yom Tov. The Rambam appears to, except maybe Hilchos Nedarim. The Rambam appears to think that Tosefes is only for Yom Kippur, and specifically only for the fasting. But the vast majority of Rishonim assume there is a din of Tosefes, Shabbos, Yom Tov as well. But then the Gemara has another answer, and that is, no. We're not talking about the last couple of minutes, the last half hour, whatever it is of Tisha. I mean, the whole Tisha. Misana, the 9th of the month, the Misana, the 10th of the month. You guys said something remarkable. What's the Gemara say? In what sense you're Misana, the 9th of the month? You eat. Exactly. You are not Misana, the 9th of the month. You are anti-Misana, the 9th of the month. So then, in what way do you call that? Chas v'shalom, it seems as though the Torah is engaging in doublespeak. The Torah is saying fast when it means eat. Our Torah is a Torah of truth. Many people trifle with truth. Bizman hazeh and throughout the ages. But our Torah is a Torah of truth. The Torah meant eat, it would say eat. The Torah doesn't say X when it means Y. The Torah is the Torah of Emes. So how do you say fast on the ninth when you mean eat on the ninth? So the Gemara says, well, the reason why the Torah describes the mitzvah of eating as fasting is to tell you that kala ovla b'chi v'sana v'asiri ki ilu v'sana chi v'asiri. If you eat on the ninth, you'll get schar as though you had fasted not only on the tenth but on the ninth as well. What's the difference between schar for eating and schar for fasting? Whatever the mitzvah is, it is. So al pshuto, it means we have a principle in Pirkei Avos, lefum tzara agra. Rama quotes it in Hilchos Deis, I believe. Lefum tzara agra, that the amount of schar we get is, before we talk about the other week, Thursday night, that the amount of schar you get is proportional to how difficult the Nisayan is. Everyone has easier Nisayanos and harder Nisayanos. So if the Nisayan is not hard, I don't get as much schar. Nisayan is really hard for me, I get more schar when I succeed, or to the extent that I succeeded. For however many minutes I succeeded, I'll get more schar the more difficult it was to achieve that success. So that's al pi pshuto, the Gemara is saying, that it's fasting is hard, eating is easy. So if you have a mitzvah to fast, that's hard. You get a lot of schar per hour. If a mitzvah to eat, that's, for most of us, pretty easy. So you'll get a mitzvah, you get schar, but not so much. Oh, malal of akasav. Here's a chiddush in the pasuk. The Torah describes the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur as fasting to tell you that here you get a special bonus. You get double points, ke'ilu, triple points. That even though you're doing an easy mitzvah, the Torah promises you'll get schar ke'ilu, this was a hard mitzvah. Okay, that's all pshuta. What does this all mean, though? Acharei kechlos, I call it all the dust settles. There is a mitzvah on Erev Yom Kippur, and Erev Yom Kippur, mitzvah on Erev Yom Kippur, mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur on the 10th, mitzvah on Erev Yom Kippur on the 9th. What's it all about? So we're probably familiar with Rashi in Yuma, Pei Aleph, where the Gemara discusses this. So Rashi says, you're preparing for the Tzom. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives you, you're going to fast on the 10th, so you have to eat on the 9th as a preparation. The Rosh in Yuma points out that it gives you a chance to start, enter into Yom Kippur with appreciation of Chasdei Abore. Because he says, consider what Rashi said. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. And the point of the mitzvah is to prepare for the fast. If there had been no pasuk, this mysterious pasuk of B'Tishrei L'Chodesh, what would we have done on the 9th of Tishrei anyways? Eaten to prepare for the fast. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't have to make it into a mitzvah for us to do it. We would have done it anyways because we're fasting tomorrow. See, so Rosh says, look, Kadosh Baruch Hu b'chazdo v'tuvo b'rachamav, he wanted to mizakas some more mitzvahs. So he took something you could do anyways and made a mitzvah, gave us a mitzvah to prepare for the tainus. And that way, it's mechaz de Hashem. We come in with more schar. We come in with more schar. There are nafkaminas in this idea, as well. The Chuvas of Kiveger. Talks about a situation where there was a young woman who was ill, and the type of medical treatment she was getting required that she, the doctors at the time, felt that the solution to her problem was she had this. Sounds like it was the 18th century equivalent or early 19th century equivalent of vitamins, sort of, maybe. And she was supposed to subsist just on this and on nothing else. She couldn't eat regular food, but she had to have these specific type of vitamins, elixirs, medications, what have you, that her doctors thought that was the solution to her problem. So she wanted to eat an Erev Yom Kippur. She's a mitzvah to eat an Erev Yom Kippur. She's not going to listen to these doctors. She's going to eat. So the local Rav, the family had brought her to local Rav, and the Rav said, the doctor said, it's dangerous for you to eat. Don't eat regular food. He ba'achas, she has to eat. So the Rav reaches out to Kiveger, who writes back. Kiveger was such an anav. He told the stories of, and the famous story, I think it's Kiveger and the Nesivos. The famous story, they're both in the wagon, they were going somewhere together, and the town they were traveling to, so they heard that the wagon was coming with these two Gedolei Hadar, I believe it was Kriyagin and Sivas. So the whole crowd gathers and walks down the road out of the town to meet the wagon. So it must have been a big wagon, otherwise the story doesn't make any sense, but
the Siva sees this whole crowd. He says, "Ah, they're coming to Mechaber Kivager. I should also." So he hops out his side of the wagon and joins the crowd. And the crowd's like pushing the wagon to the show of covered. Meanwhile, Kivager's on the other side of the wagon, and he says, "Wow, this whole crowd that came to Mechaber Nesivas, I should also Mechaber Nesivas." So he hops out and he's pushing the wagon. And then finally, the driver is just in the front driving. What does he know? And then he finally parks, and it turns out they were pushing an empty wagon because both the Rekivei and the Nesivas had already hopped out of the wagon. The Kiviger was an incredible anav. And he recognized that this was a situation where he had to, for once, access some shtalts. So he writes, "Tell her that you spoke to Rekivei. I said, and if need be, go to her." So tells the Rav, go to her with two gabayim and say, "You have a letter from Hagon Rekivager commanding her she must not eat." The Rav had reached out to her to say, "Well, maybe it's a mitzvah seishas man gramim hechetesi women are chayav mitzvah achil v'erev Yom Kippur." Besides the fact that medically she should not be eating. If I remember correctly, the Shoel raises a question about is this a mitzvah for women? And Rabbi Kivager, if I remember correctly, says it's not a mitzvah. It may not be a. It may depend. The one issue is on the one hand, it probably is not an independent mitzvah. It's probably a function of fasting. So if women are as included as men in the mitzvah of fasting, which they are. So then presumably they're, according to Rashi, they're also equally included in the preliminary mitzvah of eating. On the other hand, and this is a point that the Netziv makes in his comments on the She'iltos, that the other angle of Rashi is that this mitzvah presumably only applies if you're going to fast the next day. If this girl is not going to fast anyways the next day, because she's going to have to take these trufos that the doctors had prescribed. So if you're going to have a diabetic, who knows in advance that he's going to have a mitzvah tomorrow to eat? His mitzvah on Yom Kippur is to eat. Just had this conversation a couple of days ago with a woman who's pregnant, and we're talking about how she should handle Yom Kippur, and hopefully she can get through without dehydrating, without needing to break her fast. I said to her, "Then this is what the poskim will be showing Menachonim, point that repeatedly. You'll find that in Yom Kippur. You'll see how you're doing. You'll find out whether it's Ratzon Hashem that you should fast as Yom Kippur or it's Ratzon Hashem that you should eat. But either way, the goal is to do Ratzon Hashem, whatever that may be." Just like Ratzorsky pointed out at the beginning of COVID. Usually we daven Tzil B'Tzibur because Ratzon Hashem, we should daven Tzil B'Tzibur. If right now it's Ratzon Hashem, we should not daven Tzil B'Tzibur, then we should follow Ratzon Hashem and not do daven Tzil B'Tzibur. We do mitzvahs ultimately because that's what Baruch Hu wants us. So if I have a mitzvah to eat, I'm supposed to break my fast Yom Kippur. I know that in advance. So then there's no special mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. That's in the Tziv and the Medayik, because the She'iltos doesn't just say call on Mis'ana B'chi. He says call on Mis'ana B'chi. Sorry, not just to call Ochel B'chi, but call Ochel B'chi U'mis'ana Ba'asiri, both. If I eat on the 9th and I fast on the 10th, then Malal of Akasav, Torah considers as though I fasted on both. Now, it's a package deal. That's sort of that comment of the Shiltos from the Gaonim is an extra strong expression of this idea of Rashi. But I should share with you that there is another set of approaches also, and with this we close for now. If you look at Ben Yonah in Shari Tshuva, in his Sefer, his How to Guide to Doing Tshuva, so he talks about this also in Chel Gimel. Deep into Chel Gimel, he talks about this Gemara, the mitzvah Achil Erev Yom Kippur. And he has three approaches. One of them is a little bit like Rashi, and that is, it's Hachana. He doesn't say Hachana for fasting like Rashi does, he says Hachana for tshuva. So that way you need to eat well in Erev Yom Kippur, so you'll have energy to really engage in the difficult work of doing tshuva on Yom Kippur. You'll be equipped to make it through the fast, but you'll be equipped with the energy to access, to leverage the potential of Yom Kippur. And then he goes on to say, and then he gives two other approaches. Two other approaches both assume that it's not just a hachana for tomorrow, but that it's a se'uda. Either that it's a se'udas yomtif, says Yom Kippur is a yomtif, but
There is an element of Simcha Yom Kippur. So the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah, Perek Gimel. Really, in theory, there ought to be a Yom Tov Suda on Yom Kippur. But we can't, because we have to fast. So that's why you have the din instead, is that you're mocked in the Sudas Yom Tov to Erev Yom Kippur. And that's why the Ramah also quotes that we have a practice to make a quasi-Suda when Yom Kippur is over, not just practice because you're hungry, but to make it somewhat festive, because that's also along these lines, that's also another quasi-Sudas Yom Kippur, because you couldn't have it on Yom Kippur itself. And then a third approach that Rabbi Yonah has is not just, and this is really his primary approach, is not just Sudas Yom Tov, but he says it's the following. He says, it used to be, I don't think this has been not in style anymore, but in the old time shuls, it's true even nowadays that when you build a building, when you buy a house for yourself, or if a group gets together and builds a shul building, it's rare that you're paying for it in cash. It's rare that you have enough money in the bank account to actually pay for 100% up front. What do? Mortgage, meaning you pay some of it up front, a down payment, and you take out a big loan from the bank, and that pays for the construction, or that pays for the purchase. And then, over time, every month, you're paying off the bank bit by bit until finally, after 10 years, 15 years, 30 years, you make your last payment, and now the loan is satisfied. Like we were talking about last week, in the context of Shemitah's Ksafim and that Shita of the Ramban, when a Lova finally completes repayment of a loan, what does the Malva give him? You get the Shtarchov back. And you destroy it. You do something with it. You get rid of it. You make sure the Malva is not going to get it again. There used to be the minig, I don't think this has been so in vogue lately, is that shuls would have mortgage burning parties. I think it was often like at the next annual dinner. It was like an event that they would have a fire and toss all the mortgage documents into the fire. Because it was super, super exciting. Here you have a group of Jews who were scraping together money every month to pay the bills, to pay the bank back for the shul that they built. And now, finally, after years and years and years, that chov is off their heads. That's a major simcha. That's a major simcha. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, if you actually, we intuitively understand that paying back this loan has been something on our heads because it's been money out of our pockets, and going forward we're no longer going to have that monthly bill. If you care about your chataim, if it bothers you that you did these chataim, if it's really on your head, then the fact that Yom Kippur is here is a cause for extraordinary simcha. Baruch Hashem, my aveiros are finally about to disappear. In other words, I would say, it's a su'uda that expresses your charata. One chelik of tshuva is the regret over the past. Throughout the year, it's charata is mental and verbal. You feel it and you talk about it. It's emotional, it's mental, it's verbal. For Yom Kippur, is actually have charata, not b'machshava b'dibor, but it's charata ayde maisa. You express your charata by celebrating the coming of Yom Kippur, by having a su'uda. And now the Rabbeinu Yonah writes that, the Mordechai writes it as well, in the back of Yuma. He has quotes of Medrash, this whole story about this Jew who goes, I think it was a tailor, not a wealthy man, he goes to market in Erev Yom Kippur to buy himself a fish for the Erev Yom Kippur Suda, and he comes to the fishmonger, there's one nice fish left. So he says, I want to buy it. And before he completes the sale, A member of the palace of the local counter duke shows up, and he wants to buy fish for his master. So they start a bidding war. This squire, this page, is in a bidding war with the simple Jewish tailor over the fish. Back and forth and back and forth, and finally the tailor wins the bidding war, and he walks home with his prize. He later gets called to the palace. Chutzuf. It's an affront to the honor of the count. Who do you think you are to outbid my emissary? A chutzpah. They thought that this was like an act of rebellion. And the tailor defends this and you understand, Your Highness, it was not meant as a disrespect.
So then why on earth were you paying so much money for a fish if not because you want to show me up? He says, no, you understand. Today is a day, Yom Kippur is a day, Yom Slicha Mechiluhu. Today is a day of Kaparas Avonos, and that's why I want to celebrate. It was not meant, sorry, another example of where you meant one thing and but the recipient took it a different way. You had taken it, Your Highness, as an affront. It wasn't meant as an affront. It was just an expression of my simcha, as Ben Yonah says as well, the simcha of Kaparas Avonos. And I would wrap this up with the following insight. The Rambam counts a mitzvah of tshuva. Maybe we'll talk about some more tomorrow. He has a very unique way of formulating the mitzvah of tshuva, but he has a mitzvah of tshuva, and that is the mitzvah that's at the introduction and is the focus of his 10 Parakim Hilchos Tshuva. Rabbi Yona famously has two mitzvahs of tshuva. One mitzvah of tshuva is tshuva all year long, like the Rambam. But then he has a second mitzvah of tshuva on Yom Kippur. Rabbi Yona understands, Lefnei Hashem Titaru. You understand, we can say that pasuk repeatedly, of course, Yom Kippur. How do you translate that? Mikol chatoseichem lefnei Hashem titaru. You will become tahar, or you shall become tahar. This is like a statement of fact. You're gonna, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is promising us that you're gonna become tahar. I will be matar you. Or is it a tzivui? You must be matar yourself. So several Rishonim understand it's a tzivui. Within that, the different ways of understanding what the tzivui is, maybe we'll get back to some of Rav Sadia Gaon's approach tomorrow, but Rabbi Yona says it's a tzivui, and what type of tahara? Tahara me'avonos. This is a separate, there's a mitzvah of tshuva all year long, but there's a separate mitzvah of tshuva on Yom Kippur. It's a double kin to do tshuva on Yom Kippur. Don't be Mori Heter and leave all your tshuva on Yom Kippur. I'll get a double mitzvah then. But yes, Rabbi Yona understands that tshuva on Yom Kippur is an added mitzvah of Ne'ashem Tetaru. So it could be that Rabbi Yona Shitaso. Rabbi Yona Shitaso, who understands that tshuva on Yom Kippur is a new added mitzvah, so that's why it has added aspects. Number one, he had one of his approaches we mentioned before is Achil Be'er Yom Kippur is meant as a hachana for the tshuva, not just a hachana for the tzon. Because he understands that this is a separate, unique mitzvah. If I'm planning to do Cheshvan Nefesh, in the middle of Chodesh Shvat, there's no special mitzvah to have a good meal before I sit down to make Cheshvan Nefesh. That's only a mitzvah, it's not for Stam Tshuva. But the Tshuva of Yom Kippur is a separate mitzvah and therefore calls for its own hachana. And even more so, the last approach we just mentioned, that it's an expression of charat simcha over kaparas avonos, as Rabbi Yona develops it, more than the Mordechai, it meant to be a visceral, physical expression of my charat, that there is bothering me so much in my kishkas, not just cerebrally, I shouldn't have done this, but mamash, I feel in my kishkas, I feel so terrible about it, that my gut reaction, my instinctive reaction to Yom Kippur coming is gewalt. I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I see the finish. I already start celebrating. This is the last lap. It's there. Kapara Zavonis is coming. In other words, as I said before, it's the charata al-day maisa. That step of tshuva, which by the way, for Rabbeinu Yonah, maybe we'll discuss this tomorrow also, is particularly central, feeling bad about the past. So all year long, tshuva is charata bedibur, charata b'machshava, charata b'lev. But the tshuva of Yom Kippur requires charata de maisa also. The charata de maisa is the sudas mechilas avonos, the celebration, the physical celebration with the suda is a part of the special tshuva of Yom Kippur. So it's a Rabbeinu Yonah l'shitasa, the way he explains two of his three explanations for this intriguing B'tisha l'chodesh, Achila be'erev Yom Kippur. Two of his three, Rabbeinu Yonah's three explanations are consistent with his approach that tshuva on Yom Kippur is different and unique and an additional mitzvah over and above tshuva all year long. So these are some of the thoughts that help to shape not only our erev Yom Kippur, but help to shape our aseres mei tshuva in general, both in terms of the thinking and the striving and the ambition of the course aseres mei tshuva, and even the considering. Both considering the pius, Simen Taf Resh Vav, that's officially an Erev Yom Kippur din, that's Kedai Rei to do now, and considering Taf Resh Dalet, the Achila Be'erev Yom Kippur gives us insight into what it is that we're headed into and the sort of work and the sort of opportunities that we have over these holy days leading up to Yom Kippur.